He chose to fix his mind on that destination, and he chose an auspicious place by the banks of the sacred river. And then there's some discussion here about, was it the Ganges or was it the Jamuna? Jiva Goswami says it was the Jamuna, because it's many times more, 100 times more sanctified than the sanctifying Ganges. Why is that? They're both sanctifying because they're water from the causal ocean which passed by the foot, washed the foot of Vamana, and that sanctified this water that descended, and therefore it's sanctifying. But then Prabhupada writes in his commentary, as Vasudeva was carrying Krishna and Krishna fell into the water and crossing the Jamuna River, Krishna's lotus feet sanctified the water. Again, what to speak of all of his childhood pastimes with playing with the cowherd boys and sanctifying the waters again and again and again. So there's this transcendental debate. Was it the Jamuna? Was it the Ganges? Traditionally, the Ganges, but so Prabhupada sticks with the tradition, but as in the next verse, it was the Ganges, but it was the Jamuna. We really know it was the Jamuna. Geographically, it makes sense to. It's like Balaram with his plow pulling Hastinapur into the, was it the Ganges or was it the Jamuna? Anyway. Thus the king, the worldly descendant of the Pandavas, decided at once and for all, and sat on the Ganges bank to fast until death and give himself to the lotus feet of Lord Krishna, who alone is able to award liberation. So there's this theme in persons that are getting very serious about spiritual perfection. The business of curtailing the eating process, very strongly controlling the senses, side by side with fixing the mind upon the personality of Godhead. Prabhupada did this personally in his own example. Sometimes this may be voluntary, sometimes it may be involuntary. Voluntary is better. Dhruva Maharaj, and I've been speaking on the Dhruva Maharaj Leela for some time now, and it's an integral part of Dhruva's perfection. He controlled his eating, he controlled his intake of water, he controlled his breathing. He perfected the pranayama system, whereby he was breathing twice a month. So you can't do that just by mechanical means. Don't even need to try. You can't do it. It's not just by practicing it. It's by spiritual contact. It's possible. Prabhupada once explained about Raghunath Das Goswami. You know, he ate at the end of his life. He was taking one palm full of buttermilk every other day. So he got very skinny. Prabhupada was explaining in a room conversation that his whole body was trembling from, you know, what you would experience if you have, you're fasting and you have fever, you're just, your body is weak. But he wasn't just like emaciating his body and doing nothing. He was, the six Goswamis are very active. Prabhupada was very active. But he ate very, very little. You can't do that artificially. You should not try to do that artificially. And you cannot do it artificially. But by spiritual strength, one can do such things. And it will happen naturally, not artificially. But there's a certain stage where that takes place. So he sat on the bank of the sacred river Ganges. Same Dhruva Maharaj went to Mahavan in Vrindavan. And he, the description, he was, the primary focus was on the physical austerities. And of course, side by side with the physical austerities, he was chanting his mantra. And he was, as he was following the instructions of Narada, fixing his mind on the super soul and meditating upon the forms of that super soul as he appears in this world. And his leelas, and his rupa, and his guna, exchanges of loving dealings with his devotees. But side by side with that, in an extra effort, reducing the bodily functions. Just like we do, so this is, it's not for punishment, or for, like in the mystic yoga process, to curb the senses or control the serpentine senses. It's withdrawing consciousness from physical affairs and concentrating consciousness on the spiritual affairs, like Grandfather Bhishma. Nice example also. He was extending his consciousness in service all the time. Extending and extending and extending for the Pandavas and to uphold Dharma. Speaking to Maharaj Yudhisthira, always caring to give training to his grandchildren, right up to the final stage. Then he withdrew consciousness from external affairs and fixed his consciousness exclusively on the Supreme Lord. So while one is extending one's consciousness, one should do those extensions of consciousness activities, not only in goodness, but in transcendence. Not only one should be a vegetarian, but one should accept Krishna Prasad. Not only one should restrain one's senses from illicit, but one should invest one's consciousness in, for God's purpose only, husband and wife combining, for God's service only, to attract a specific qualified soul, and then for years together to train that living entity in the way of God-conscious life. So there is the extending of the senses program, but there's a stage of life that the Bhagavatam is illustrating here through the life of Maharaj Parikshit, where there's this stage of life where one withdraws consciousness from external things. And so thus the king, the worthy descendant of the Pandavas, decided once and for all and sat on the Ganges bank to fast until death and give himself up to the lotus feet of Lord Krishna, who alone is able to award liberation. So, freeing himself from all kinds of association and attachments, he accepted the vows of a sage So there is the business of freeing oneself. Prabhupada explains this. Freeing oneself from previous sins and freeing oneself from further sins. And the freeing oneself from previous sins is his meditation upon the personality of Godhead, Prabhupada's indication here. And from further sins is just withdrawing his consciousness from the affairs of material life. That he took that as the arrangement that Krishna was making for him. Now these are, one may take it, that these are storybook-ish. And how does it really apply to our lives? And when that time of death comes, you'll see how it applies to your life. Because you'll be prepared, as opposed to those who aren't prepared. Spend a little bit of time, the modern day event of this was the passing of Bhakti Tirtha Swami. And, well, if you're really interested, you could hear Radhanath Swami's 5.5-hour lecture at a Sunday feast program, the longest Sunday feast lecture in the history of ISKCON, on the passing of Bhakti Tirtha Swami, or the life of Bhakti Tirtha Swami. It's very, very detailed, 5.5 hours worth of detail. But the idea is that the samskaras from his birth was, he was born in a ghetto in Cleveland, Ohio. In fact, not even an important city in America. It's a city, but it's a very poor city. And it's not even a big town, Los Angeles or New York or Chicago or Dallas or some big city. It's a much smaller city. And anyway, hardships. Ghetto standard hardships. When he was a young boy, he used to have to carry a gun just for self-defense. Because if you didn't carry a gun, the gun would be used on you. So he just carried a gun. I mean, I never heard this before. I heard hard times. Just for survival. And by this arrangement, that arrangement, that arrangement, this arrangement, he was given a scholarship because it was a time in American history when black rights were just turning around and schools, universities were given big grants by the federal government to accept black students into their, they were looking for black students. And somebody recommended him to go to any school he wanted to go because he had just done charitable acts of helping other ghetto kids be successful in their academic work. And his quality of service was so much appreciated that someone said, you tell me what school you want to go to and I'll get you in. So he, this one, that one, that one, this one, that one. He picked Princeton University. And he ended up being the president of his graduating class and the chairman of the black rights movement or something like that. And a very prestigious, popular, highly achieving person from ghetto to that. And then he left all that and when he met devotees. And just left all of that prestige and prominence and influence and became a servant at Prabhupada's feet. And meditated his whole life on this narration goes, he kept a daily journal. He would write a letter to Prabhupada every day. And kept those journals. I guess at some point they'll be published or something. But his inner reflections on just serving the lotus feet of Srila Prabhupada. There's many very interesting things that take a long time to narrate. But when his death notice came, because of his fixed consciousness and his capacity for self-sacrifice, it was a joyful event for him. I went and visited him. And while his body was racked with pain, persons that I know that are doctors say that what he was going through, the fact, I mean, did I describe this here? It was like a month before he left. And I went to visit in his room, and he was lying down. And he had his hand under his kurta like this. And at a certain point in the conversation, he described what was going on with his body. What was happening right here was there was a cancer growth that was as big as a baseball right at his neck. You know what it's like when you have a little boil or something like that? The pain, the pressure that the boil, and that's just a boil. This is cancer as big as a baseball pressing on your collarbone. Then over here was a broken, fractured collarbone, because when he was riding in a car to go give the class, there's a bumpy road in Gita Nagari, they hit a bump at the wrong place and his collarbone broke. But they couldn't fix it because it's right next to the cancer growth, so just he had to endure the pain of a broken collarbone and cancer growth pressing on his collarbone. And in the groin area of his body, on both sides, cancer growth. And then one in the middle of his back, near his kidneys, that the care provider was constantly putting cold and hot and cold and hot and cold and hot just to keep, to manage the thing. He had an amputated leg because the first cancer growth was in his foot that then spread to the other parts of his body. Bed sores, because he couldn't move, he's always in one position. You know, when you're trying to rest and you don't feel uncomfortable, so you roll over. He couldn't roll over. He had been a big bed sores underneath his body. And, you know, as skinny as your pinky. And smiling radiantly. Radiantly. I could go on. I'll go a little bit. He hadn't been able to sleep the night before. I had a prior appointment to see him at 2 o'clock. The caretakers called and said he wasn't able to sleep at all last night. His body was in such pain. Could you possibly come 2 hours early? Because maybe he'll be able to rest after you're gone. So I expected to find, you know, what somebody's, we might expect. He was lying down, and Radhanath Maharaj was with me and a couple of other devotees, and he just was smiling and radiating joyfully. And I thought, you know, I should just pay my respects and let him rest. So I was there for more than 2 hours, and it wasn't a conversation. It was a monologue. He was just explaining. What he said at the very end was, everybody who comes to see, I just meditate on what service can I perform for them, because I may never see this person again. So I'd like that my last encounter with this person to be some service. So he was sharing his creative preaching, how he established what he did. He gave like a summary of his preaching career. Because he said, you're the most active preacher in North America. More than anybody else, you travel around North America. So, and he knows that I look into this and that and the other creative ways of presenting Krishna consciousness. So he shared me with what his was. And as he was speaking, he was getting more strength and more strength and more, just from giving and giving and giving. And the only thing that ended the conversation was his 2 o'clock call from Satsrup Maharaj was coming in, so he took the call, and so we exited. And in short, he was on another plane of consciousness. The grandfather Bhishma Day plane of consciousness, where he couldn't, it's not that he was gifted with the right to give up his body whenever he wanted, but he was gifted with transcendental consciousness. He was beyond bodily consciousness. Fully transcendental consciousness. Certainly his eating was controlled. And it wasn't voluntary, like it was with Dhruva or with Maharaj Parikshit. But it was controlled. And his consciousness was just going to Krishna. Otherwise it was not, again, physicians have told me, someone who has even one of these tumors, they have to put them on the most intense kind of painkiller so that they're practically zoned out. It's too painful to bear the pain. He had multiple of those things. And whenever the shock of the body to lose a limb or part of a limb just amputated his leg. Inconceivable amount of pain. Completely transcended it. It wasn't, you know, storybook. It was right there. Day after day after day. It wasn't like he put on a show for 2 hours. He was in that consciousness all the time. Is that available to us? Is there a price to pay? Are there instructions that can help us get there? And yes to all of those things? And the pages of the Srimad Bhagavatam are preparing us for that certainty in our life. That stage will come when the soul will leave the body. And it may be today or tomorrow or the next day, but it's going to happen. How to prepare ourselves? So that's going to be the question that Maharaj Parikshit asks Sukadeva Goswami, the important question of the Bhagavatam. So one can prepare one's life now for that inevitable event. As I've said so many times, how much energy you're investing to prepare for that stage of life when you'll have to be earning money. How much time and energy are you spending for that certain stage of life? I mean, my God, add up the number of hours that anyone, and then collectively, that we're all spending for that certainty of life. The time will come. And even that's less certain than death, because death may come before that happens. And how much are we preparing for that one? Why? Because we're in the bodily conception of life. If we were in the spiritual conception of life, it'd be the other way around. Literally. We spend something to invest our time and energy to take care of this spot life, and we would be investing maximum on eternal life. But we're not doing that because we're in the bodily conception. And so, what Prabhupada is writing here in the purport is to protect oneself from further unavoidable sins. And unavoidable sins means even, so we're not on the level of Maharaj Parikshit, but even Maharaj Parikshit. Here's how Prabhupada writes. The conditions of the material world are so made, then one has to commit sins willingly or unwillingly. And the best example is Maharaj Parikshit himself, who was a recognized, sinless, pious king. But he also became the victim of an offense, even though he was ever unwilling to commit such a mistake. Even unintentional mistakes are bound to be made just because, you know, we're limited. We make mistakes. Even Maharaj Parikshit. So what to speak of ourselves? And is there no responsibility for those mistakes? There's responsibility for those mistakes. How is that responsibility to be addressed by devotional service. So by fixing his mind in devotion to Krishna, the reaction for that past mistake was taken care of. So he could have done that. But what he wanted was more than that. He wanted to yield to the indication of Krishna that he should be in a situation where no more mistakes. And so, in addition, he gave up the worldly involvement, not only the external, but even the internal. The conception of himself as king. That was a designation, and he gave up the designation and the activities connected to the designation. So we also, like Lord Chaitanya's teaching, kiva vipra, kiva nyasi, shudra kini noi. I'm not a brahmana, he was a brahmana. I'm not a sannyasi, he was a sannyasi. So it's detaching oneself from the upadhi, the designation that one is in. I'm a student, I'm an Indian, I'm from this state, I'm from this mother tongue, I'm from this caste, I'm from this family. Those are designations of the body, but they're not the designations of the soul. So we may act in a responsible manner according to the worldly considerations, but not identify with them. And there's a phase of life which require to not identify with them, but act through them. I'm a man, I'm a woman. And so I have the man's role, and I have the woman's role. And we dutifully serve Krishna according to our position of embodiment. But that's not who we are. Then there's a stage where you just let go of that altogether also. We need to be prepared for that because it's going to be taken away. That stage will come. And it's not just storybook. It's real. And the ability to prepare ourselves and achieve that consciousness is also real. It's really real. It's really available. And we're being prepared. How to do our duties properly in this life, and how to meet that stage when doing those duties is no longer your duty. Detaching yourself from those duties is your duty. And exclusively fixing your consciousness on the Supreme, that's your duty. There's one man I know who said, I'm very confident. Whatever I apply my mind to, I know I'll be able to do it. And so when that stage of life comes, I'll do it. And now I'm doing this. So we'll see. See you in Vaikuntha. Or not. It's possible that one can get a diploma from IIT Delhi just by the director of the school deciding this person should get a diploma. Just like Elton John was given an honorary degree from Oxford University and now he's declared himself as a married man to another married man. Elton John. So it may happen that you'll get an honorary degree from IIT Delhi. But normally that's not the procedure. And you shouldn't count on it. You go through. So we follow Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti with the understanding that through that purification the reactions of our past misdeeds will be eliminated, and the opportunity when we meet that stage of our life when complete withdrawal from worldly duties, we'll be able to face it courageously, boldly and effectively, because otherwise involuntarily the whole thing will be taken and our consciousness will be in that same attached position, and it will bring us to another birth, another time around to go through all this stuff all over again. I don't know about you, but I'm not too eager to go through all this stuff all over again. Especially teenage life. I really don't want to go through teenage life all over again. Anywhere in the world. No culture makes teenage life easy. Just the nature of... And it gets worse and worse. So, let us not become teenagers again. Let us go back to Godhead. Even taking birth, packed up in the womb and all that stuff. That's one thing. Being a teenager is worse. Terrible. So, these two things, they're now running parallel for Maharaj Parikshit. Fixing his mind completely, exclusively, with no other interest of some process than fixing his mind upon the personality of Godhead. And reducing his the contact of his senses with worldly affairs, even bodily functions, eating, fasting till death. And when doing that, it's not like, you know, self-destruction. It's not austerity in the mode of ignorance. It's because he has the spiritual qualification, he can do that. In the purport, Prabhupada quotes this nice verse from the 11th canto, chapter 5. Svapadamulam bhajatak priyasya taktanya bha bhavasya hari pareshaha vikkarma yachchopitap chopatitam katanchit dunoti sarvam hridi sannivishto. Dunoti sarvam hridi sannivishto. The heart becomes completely cleansed of all vikarmas when svapadamulam bhajatak priyasya. When the devotee takes complete shelter at the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord. You achieve the dust of the lotus feet of the Lord's devotee, you achieve the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord. So that's about to happen by his contact with Shukadeva Goswami. So this is describing, it's giving us an indication of the exalted qualification of Maharaj Parikshit. What's the condition of the perfect recipient of transcendental message, and then we're going to soon hear the perfect description of the perfect deliverer of that transcendental message, because both are required. Receiving that message and transmitting the message properly. Taking up, surrounding oneself with auspiciousness. By, in this case, taking shelter in the banks of the Ganges River. And detaching oneself from external things. Fixing one's consciousness upon the Supreme. Trusting that there's no more important thing to do. It's like when you're chanting. Because so many hours of the day and so many years of our life have been engaged in other than taking shelter of the holy name, the mind has a tendency to go to other things. The discipline that comes before the taste for the holy name is that there's nothing more important to be doing than to bring my attention to the holy name. Bring my consciousness, which is the direct manifestation of the soul, to the holy name of the Lord. And there's nothing more important. Whatever else that may be important, this is most important. There's nothing more important. And to practice, to cultivate that consciousness is the driving force behind this capacity to be detached and the notice of death. He didn't panic. He knew, he deliberately knew what to do, and he had the fortitude to do it. And the detachment from worldly things to do it. And to reciprocate with Maharaj Parikshit, the personality of God had sent more auspiciousness in the form of great sages to come. Now, they came on the pretext that they were going to take a pilgrimage to the Ganges River and purify themselves. But really, their higher purpose was to sanctify the atmosphere so that at the time of the passing of Maharaj Parikshit would be the most auspicious opportunity. And to witness this glorious event of Maharaj Parikshit going back to Godhead. To be a participant in that wonderful, wonderful event. But to bring the whatever auspiciousness their lives represented to bear on creating collective auspicious atmosphere for the king by Krishna's arrangement. So Sutta lists this long list of great personalities. Atri, Chavana, Sharadvan, Arishtanemi, Brikhu, Vashishta, Parashra, Vishramitra, Angira, Parashuram, Uttatya, Indrapramada, Idma, Idmavahu, Midhatati, Devala, Arishtasena, Bharadvaj, Gautama, Pipalada, Maitreya, quite an assembly, Orva, Kavasha, Kumbayoni, Dvaipayana, Vyas, and the great personality Narada, and many, many others. So Prabhupada gives a biography of many of them, most of them. There are many other saintly demigods, kings, and special royal orders called Arunadayas, certain Rajarshis, from different dynasties of sages, when they all assemble together to meet Maharaj Parikshit. He received them properly and bowed his head to the ground. So he's no longer in the designation of king, but he's still offering them the due respect. The offering of due respect, it's a matter of courtesy or proper etiquette, proper good manners. That's minimal. But the higher purpose is to open one's heart to receive that resource that the presence of that great personality represents. To be spiritually receptive if one offers submission. So he wanted their blessings. He wanted their the mercy that they came to bestow. Then, after receiving them all with humble state of mind, with folded palms, he stood before them and informed them of his plan to fast until death and to fix his mind upon the personality of Godhead and to receive instructions how the 7 days remaining, by now it must be less than 7 days, 6.5 days. Took some time to get to that position before he was going to give up his life to be. He knew, but he still inquired out of due respect. So we'll continue that portion tomorrow. Let's see if there's any discussion. Thank you. questions? When the Yaksha approached Maharaj Yudhisthira from the lake of death, one of his questions was, what is the most wonderful thing in this world? And you know the answer? We all know the answer, right? Everyone has died, and yet each person is thinking, somehow I will not die. Most wonderful thing. Or say the same thing in a different way. We're spending so much time to prepare for one certainty, that is, fruitive activity. But liberation? Later. And if the idea is later, will we have the capacity and propensity, or will we be overly attached to all the fruitive accumulation that our life is? Does it happen later, or does it begin now? The most wonderful thing is, for the most part, people don't begin now. If they do begin now, it's with another idea. It will enhance my fruitive activity. It's amazing. Something?
It's clear that one shouldn't or cannot imitate this kind of... How does one... Is it just a matter of executing a Krishna conscious duties and one naturally comes to that, or does one have to make a specific effort to, you know, get detached?
Well, our requirement right now, our assignment, our job description, is to not do what Maharaj Pariksit did, but to yukta vairagya. To purify our senses, purify our mind, and purify the soul by the process of active devotional service. And it's like we can understand from that activity, especially, and I'm highlighting, from the teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and our acharyas, especially the act of compassion on the spiritual platform, that leads us to the next stage, the spontaneous devotional service stage. And in that spontaneous devotional service stage, the voluntary detachment comes of its own accord. We can certainly cultivate, according to our capacity, detachment. As Raghunath Das Goswami showed by his example. And the followers of Lord Chaitanya also strive for minimizing, we can say, you know, simplicity. Simplicity very enthusiastically established in one's life as renunciation. Just doing without unnecessary things. So for the sake of giving room for necessary things, not just for the sake of renunciation, otherwise it's dry renunciation. So my answer is that as our spiritual consciousness grows, that stage of voluntary detachment approaches. As from Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti, Raga Nuga Sadhana Bhakti, and then Bhava Bhakti follow. It follows naturally. So our job assignment right now is Yukta Vairagya. And then it's not a matter of Ghana Tarala. Should I renounce or should I involve myself? It's not a mental event. It's a spiritual event. It just flows. something else? You were raising a question a little bit before.
I am trying to Bali Bali chanting. I found that absorption goes everywhere, but not on this Bali Bali. Every time I tried it, put all the just go and just on the Bali Bali. But again, in the after 2-3 months, I again go away. And I think what I did, other activities are actually the must be controlled Bali Bali, but must means the way that this chanting can be improved only by Bala, including devotional service. But Bala, both of them are related. Bala, how to...
You want the cause and effect? I would recommend that you don't spend extra effort and energy understanding which comes first. Does the regulation of my devotional service come first, or does the extra concentration upon the holy name come first, causing the next one, which makes the Lord Chaitanya's teaching is that the most important thing is chanting. So the most important thing is chanting, and that's where strength comes from the other thing. But doing the other thing properly enhances chanting. So you do the other thing because it enhances chanting, because that's the primary thing. But chanting stands on its own. The holy name is fully independent. And even if you were, you know, corrupt, like Valmiki was a murderer. He was corrupt. But he chanted with faith in Narada. And he became perfect. So chanting is the primary position. And don't think of it as a cause and effect thing. On the strength of the primary thing, attend to your devotional service and the duties that will help to purify your mind and senses so that you can chant with full attention and go forward with that. Prioritize, not cause and effect, consideration. That is to enhance the chanting of the holy name. And that's my objective, so that I can chant with rapt attention. And I have a long way to go. So when you're chanting, invest full concentration in chanting. And when you're doing your devotional service, give full attention to your devotional service with the understanding that this is going to enhance my chanting. Okay? And just stick with it. Sustained effort in devotion over time, Krishna will very mercifully reward. He'll see your effort, and he'll also see the purpose behind your effort, and he'll reciprocate. And that's how it happens. It happens by descending mercy, not by our efforts alone. Prabhupada ki.